I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, political science professor Lester Spence, and civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar. I may jump in here or there, but for now, take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, yo, fellas, what's up? Welcome to the shop. How are we doing?
Hey,
what's good, cracking. Man? Hanging in.
Yo, so, we're all sitting on the other side of history. You know what? Barack Hussein Obama II was sworn in as the 44th president of the United States of America this week. 1.8 million people watched my boy as he fumbled a line, actually. Actually, controversially fumbled the oath of office, which some people say kind of.
Both of them?
Kind of, yeah.
Can I just stop? The hating has started already. He did not fumble the line.
Oh, that's right.
The Chief Justice of the United States fumbled the line.
Always blame it on a black
man.
He repeated the fumble.
Okay, just for the. I shall play it for you. And here it is.
I, Barack Hussein Obama, do solemnly swear. That I will execute the office of President to the United States faithfully.
That I will execute
the faithfully the office of President of the United States.
The office of President of the United States faithfully.
They jacked it up.
Thanks,
particularly
Michelle.
Roberts, as you said. Yeah. This is Ruben. Yeah. Roberts tried to do this without notes, do it from memory. You know, there are a lot of folks who have heard this oath over and over again who could pull it off, you know, could do it from memory. He couldn't. And I think that Obama sort of stopped in the middle of it to say, sort of looked at him and said, are you sure you got that right? You know, he didn't quite know whether to repeat the error, you know, to cover up for Roberts right. or to set it straight and make it even worse. So it put Obama in a very strange position. So these two brothers, Harvard Law School graduates, both of them, okay, I thought they could have pulled this off.
Oh, man, Justice Mushmouth messing it up right off the gate. Dr. Spence.
Most of us didn't catch it. It wasn't until I got home that I realized that not only had he messed it up, but did it over again Wednesday, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And it's not without precedence, man. You know, Calvin Coolidge and Chester A. Arthur also had a do-over, man. A-Train, my man.
Can I just ask,
maybe you should.
Can I ask Arsalan a question, though?
Yeah.
I know that constitutional isn't your specialty, you're a civil rights lawyer, but was it legally required that he take the oath again?
Well, legally, you know, according to a recent Washington Post article, a president is required by the Constitution to say, quote, I do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States, and on and on. You know, in a statement, White House counsel Greg Kreitz said that the oath was readministered out of an abundance of caution. Now, I could not imagine any scenario in a litigation setting where, you know, there could be any cause of action where a person might say, we challenge the validity of President Obama's presidency based on the fact that he did not say these words in order. So I don't see really, you know, any sort of, you know, practical, you know, legal ramifications.
But then there are these people who are challenging Obama's citizenship and whether
exactly.
he was really an American.
So that's why it was probably wise of them to readminister it with the exact verbiage that appears in the Constitution. I think that from a political perspective, you know, it sent a nice little, you know, symbolic gesture to those, you know, conspiracy theorists out there who, you know, will say that, you know, Barack Obama is not technically the president of the United States.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that really only people here in the Beltway care about. I think people were more focused on the magnitude of the experience that occurred. You know, a lot of people didn't even watch the swearing-in ceremony but felt like a part of history because of, you know, this 24/7 coverage and just seeing 1.8 million people on the mall. It was a moment for our nation to really relish.
I don't think I agree that it's just something people in the Beltway argue about. I think that the fact that we're even talking about it, this is a big issue on the blogosphere, and I think mm-hmm. it's a reflection of mm-hmm. just how much interest there is in this. I'm with Ruben on this. I got the impression that President Obama was trying to be gracious and polite and not draw attention to the error, and he was waiting
right.
for Justice Roberts to correct himself.
Right.
And
right.
when he didn't, rather than draw further attention to it. But I think that the fact that there was immediately all this sort of email traffic flying around saying, what was that about? He's trying to mess the brother up.
I mean, if we...
Yeah, and to that point, A-Train, the Drudge Report is not... You know what? The Drudge Report is noting right now that President Obama's hand was not on a Bible for the office.
Yeah,
do-over, man.
Exactly. You know.
Hey, Michelle, this is Ruben. Can I just say these are the same folks who complain that African Americans get February as Black History Month because, quote, it's the short month. So, all right.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how I've always been taught.
Right.
is that incorrect?
You know,
this is Lester. Too much Twitter is bad for your health.
Exactly.
That's all I got.
You know, again, this is our salon. You know, if we use the blogosphere as the litmus test of our, you know, societal zeitgeist, then we're really in trouble.
Then we're
in
trouble.
Okay,
jacked.
Well,
Discovered Twitter, and now I'm all. Okay.
It's all right. It's all right.
Well, what about the highlights? Highlights of the inauguration? L. Spence?
When I was out there in the cold, and there's a moment when the screens first started working, and then everybody all of a sudden start waving these flags, and all you could see is this sea of flag wavers. I had never ever wanted to go to an inaugural. I don't think I'd ever even seen one on TV, but to actually be there, as hard as it was. I mean, so my Facebook update status says, once in a lifetime is synonymous with never again. I'm never going to do it again. Never.
Nice.
But given that I did, that moment when everybody was waving their flags, and it was an experience that was extremely powerful. Extremely powerful.
Mm-hmm. You know, for me, a high point was when homeboy was doing, you know, the parade or whatever. He's on his way to the house. My man hopped out his ride, a la John Shaft, and it just took a few steps. Everybody just went crazy. That's my dude. I got to get me one of those cars,
especially the Ruben. Secret Service. This is Ruben. Yeah, I'm sure the Secret Service love that move. Said, do not do that again. Please let us know.
All right. Well, you know what? I got in a lot of trouble on TV1Online.com for saying that the Bidens were going to get Obama in trouble. You know, because the Bidens need a minder, man, because they talk too much. I'm sorry, Joe.
Right.
Sorry,
Amen.
Jill.
Amen.
And you know what? We're not even deep into the. We're not even a week deep. Jill Biden is on Oprah telling tales out of school, man. What's that about? Yo, we got some tape, right? Well,
yeah, here it is.
Drop it.
Joe had the choice to be Secretary of State or Vice President, and I said, Joe. No. Well, okay, he did. Joe, if you're Secretary of State, you'll be away. We'll never see you. You know, I'll see you at a state dinner once in a while.
Yeah.
But I said, if you're Vice President, the entire family can come to our home. They can go to events. They can be with us all the time. And that's what's important to us.
Wow. Thanks, Michelle. Wait a second. Why is she sharing the equivalent of pillow talk on national television?
TMI.
Somebody help me out here. Dr. Spence.
It's Oprah, man. I mean, what do you expect? That's what she does. I mean, that's what she does.
Whoops.
That's hilarious.
This is Ruben. I think what you meant to say is, listen, he's going to be vice president. He's going to have a lot of time on his hands because they don't do anything. So we clearly decided to go with the vice presidential route.
Come on.
I thought of
come
Hillary.
On now.
No, you know what everybody was thinking. Everybody thought about Hillary Clinton. The notion that Hillary Clinton popped into my head, this idea that somehow she was being told, okay, in a very indirect way, that Secretary of State was actually given to Joe Biden beforehand, that Biden chose the vice presidential job, the vice presidency, instead of going Secretary of State. And all of a sudden, Hillary goes from everybody's first choice to at least somebody's second choice. So I guess that was the way I came into it.
They put out a statement, actually, the administration put out a statement saying that he was only ever offer, you know, trying to clean it up, I mean, after the fact.
Let's be honest. This is our salon. Let's be honest, guys. Jill Biden fumbled the ball. I mean, she just dropped it. She, you know, it was, to me, what was funny, you know, talking about the vice presidency or the Secretary of State position, were like there were some sort of, you know, Topps baseball cards to be traded. I was thinking, you know, was he offered like Secretary of State and three giraffes or vice president and two hippos?
Stop.
You know,
this is painful. Can I please defend the spouses? It is so hard being the spouse. I'm sorry. You're always worried you're going to say the wrong thing. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with Jimmy Israel, Lester Spence, Ruben Navarrete, and Arsalan Iftikhar in the barbershop. Back to you, Jimmy.
Yo, all right. Well, check this out. Rush Limbaugh says conservatives are drinking the Obama Kool-Aid and won't criticize him for fear of being called racist. Now, this might never happen again, but I might have to co-sign Rush on this one. Okay, we got some tape on this?
Sure. Here's what T... set. You're going to co-sign Rush Limbaugh on this.
Exactly. On this one.
All right, drop it. Drop it.
All right, here it is.
I disagree fervently with the people on our side of the aisle who have caved and who say, well, I hope he succeeds. We've got to give him a chance. Why? They didn't give Bush a chance in 2000. I've been listening to Barack Obama for a year and a half. I know what his politics are. I don't want, look, what he's talking about is the absorption of as much of the private sector by the U.S. government as possible. From the banking business, to the mortgage industry, to the automobile business, to the healthcare. I do not want the government in charge of all of these things. I don't want this to work. I hope he fails.
Now, that I don't co-sign. But I think his idea that there are a lot of tanksters out there, conservatives, liberals, that just don't want to criticize Obama for fear of being called racist.
That never stopped them before.
Yeah, I mean.
That never stopped them before. That doesn't make any sense.
Take it less.
I'm just saying.
Wasn't it just one of the guys who's running for chair of RNC who had the Barack the Magic Negro CD? I mean, we've got this long history of them doing this. There is no way in there's no way in hell. I don't care.
A-Train.
Okay. Honestly, if we look back at the Bush presidency, and if we had anybody say that I hope President Bush does not succeed or I hope that President Bush fails, the punditocracy would throw that person in Guantanamo Bay, literally or figuratively speaking. I think that Rush Limbaugh is really still pandering to what he's always pandered to, which is, you know, some of our lowest common denominators as a society.
I mean, this is Ruben's turn. Hold on. Oh, somebody needs to defend Limbaugh. I'll do it. Here, so I think the issue is this is not a case of conservatives caving because they don't want to be considered racist. Mm-hmm. I think it's conservatives caving because they don't want to be considered obstructionist. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of folks in D.C. and around the country who want these policies to work because they realize that we are in a very deep hole and we need to get out of it. And I think a lot of folks out there are rooting for Obama. And that, if you stay off of that and you go on to criticize some of his policies, you run the risk of being called an obstructionist, not necessarily a racist. But in terms of what Limbaugh is saying, and I had a chance to listen to it, he's saying, listen, there's a difference between saying I want the country to fail and I want Obama's policies to fail. Like it or not, the way Limbaugh sees it, if Obama is successful in his policies, that will be a failure and a setback for the country. You can disagree with that all you want, but that's a little different than sort of the hard interpretation that Limbaugh is wishing the country to fail.
But
it just Ruben, doesn't work that way.
Ruben, wouldn't you say that if you put the analogy of criticizing President Bush had we done it, you know, when he was elected, and now, you know, President Obama when he was elected, I mean, we have a double
standard. Well, we do that.
You know, Rush, if anybody, you know, if a liberal radio commentator went on the air after, you know, after 9/11 or after whenever, saying that I hope, you know, President Bush's policies would fail, they would be labeled unpatriotic. They would be labeled a traitor. Rush Limbaugh, he's having his cake and eating it too.
Well, this is Lester. I think there's a significant difference between Rush Limbaugh making claims about conservatives based on the concept that they need not be obstructionist, and we need to start playing the role of the loyal opposition and start fighting for the policies we believe in and saying we need to stop basically giving this guy a pass because he's black. That is political, but that's outside the realm of politics as we should be playing it. We should condemn any time something like that comes from Rush Limbaugh, anybody else's mouth, saying we're doing X because Obama's black. We should condemn that with every force we can muster.
I mean, I still say that there are a lot of people out there that do not want to criticize President Obama because he is black. They will give him a pass because he is black. And they've been in the tank and they will stay in the tank for 4 years. And they will never ever honestly tell us how they feel about his policy.
Well, Jimmy, we had that with President
Bush. I hadn't observed that.
Yeah, we had that with President Bush and all of his sycophants for 8 years, where they were not only in the tank, they're still drunk from the Bush euphoria. I mean, you know, let's bring some intellectual honesty into this debate. We have to say that, okay, fine, no president is an emperor. And so, you know, we do need to keep our elected leaders in check. But we can't have different standards for different presidents. It doesn't take a great deal of lateral thinking to see that the same sorts of standards that were applied to President George W. Bush should be given to President Barack Obama as well.
This is Ruben. I agree with that, absolutely. But it proves my point. You have a flip. You have a double standard now. The media went from being an attack dog on Bush to being a lap dog with Obama.
An attack dog win.
Yeah, it was a lap dog.
Exactly. I don't get that. All the media criticism.
It was a lap dog for Bush.
After Katrina, after we found out there were no WMDs, the whole conversation about race, There have been various times where Bush – oh, Harriet Myers, Alberto Gonzalez. There have been various points where the media went after Bush, some would say rightfully so, for the flub-ups in the second term, which most people think was a disaster compared to the first term. So there are plenty of times where the media went after Bush. What my thing is, one minute the people in the Senate are talking about – Harry Reid says we need to have a serious oversight ability here in the Senate because we never had that during the Bush years. Great. They went through four confirmation hearings and never got around to asking hard questions, but rather threw softballs at the nominees. Mm-hmm. So much for oversight.
No, but Ruben, that doesn't take away from the fact that for the first term of President Bush's presidency, USA Patriot Act, the weapons of mass destruction, I mean, come on. I mean, the media took everything he said hook, line, and sinker, and we as a nation took it hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah, because of 9/11.
No, the media was the lapdogs of the Bush presidency in the first 4 years. You tend to, you know, Republicans tend to overlook that. They only look at, you know, when the president's being criticized.
Present company accepted, right?
Right,
okay, yeah, okay, hold on. But before the shoes start flying, can we just give peace a chance?
Word.
I got to thank y'all for coming to the day, shop baby. Today. It's a new day, as Will I Am would say. And today I got to kick it over to the late A in the house, Michelle Martin.
Why, thank you, Jimmy. You're welcome. That was a very exciting discussion. Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist who writes for TheRoot.com and TV One Online. He joined us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Ruben Navarrete writes for the San Diego Union-Tribune and CNN.com, and he joined us from San Diego. Lester Spence is a political science professor at Johns Hopkins University. He joined us from member station WEAA in Baltimore. And Arsalan Iftikhar, the founder of TheMuslimGuy.com and a civil rights attorney, joined us here in our Washington, D.C. bureau. Gentlemen, thank you.
Peace.
Thank you.
Hey. Yep, yep.
And that's our program for today. Tell Me More is produced by Brechton Booker, Monica Evstatieva, Jasmine Garst, Irva Gunja, Lee Hill, Douglas Hopper, Arjun Hutchins, and Jennifer Longmire. Our planning editor is Luis Clemens, with help this week from Walter Ray Watson. Our line editor is Alicia Montgomery. The program is directed by Rob Sachs. Our technical director is Kimberly Jones, and she had a hand this week from Melissa Marquis, Drew Reynolds, Daniel Shukin, and Arthur Laurent. Our theme music was composed by Underdog Entertainment, with additional arrangements by Ian Honeyman. The supervising senior producer is Tashima Walker. The executive producer is Marie Nelson. I'm Michelle Martin, and you've been listening to Tell Me More from NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Let's talk more on Monday.